from deep within the Hayabusa Ninja Clan. This is Lethal Heat, Force Impact. And now your hosts, Freddy and Chizak Von Chizak.
My kung fu is good.
My kung fu is excellent.
Hooray! How's your mom's kung fu? I was wondering. I haven't heard from her in a while.
My mom's kung fu, it's been a little bit off lately.
Menopause.
Know. Yeah, yeah. So how is everybody?
Everybody's you and me, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Because we killed them all!
Yeah!
Boom!
Chakalaka.
Yes.
So, we've been, if you don't know us from Night of the Living podcast, we're two of the hosts of that show, which is a horror-centric show.
Yes.
And this is our action movie podcast.
Yes. And we have talked to a few people about possibly coming on and speaking with us, but we figured for the first one, since we're testing the waters, seeing what people like, what people don't like, what they want to see, we figured we'd do this one solo. Then we'll bring people on.
Yeah. It's so, like practicing kissing with your sister.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the back of your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gross.
A little.
I meant the sister thing.
I was thinking
about it a little more and I was like.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people do the back of their hand. They don't resort to relatives. Although I kissed a cousin once.
Did you?
Yeah. She wasn't my cousin at the time.
Oh, she became the cousin later?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Ain't no shame in it.
Nah.
I had a cousin watch at camp. I saw her bush on accident. Well, kind of, while swimming. She was a redhead, and it was pretty fascinating to me.
Really?
At the time. Also an identical twin.
Huh.
Yeah, and I was like, hey, those are pubes. I'm 11.
Technically, you saw two sets of pubes, because if you've seen one, you've seen both.
That's right. Identical twins, pretty much across the board, you're covered.
Yeah?
Usually.
Good times.
Yep.
So we're going to be talking about a lot of Japanese things.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Today,
this is new to me. A lot of this Japanese stuff.
Yes. Freddy's not hip on the Japanese action films. I've seen a couple, Ichi the Killer. I had heard a lot about the film that we're going to talk about today. But we'll get into this. We are going over Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a notorious film. It was believed for quite some time that it was banned in the U.S. And it caused quite a bit of controversy over in Japan when it first came out, too. Then I think we're going to talk a little bit about the release in Ninja Gaiden 2
nice.
On the Xbox.
Yeah.
But let's get right to that movie there.
All right.
Battle Royale.
So you're saying courtesy of our good friend Scott Fogel.
Yes. He dropped a copy of this on my lap, and I was very excited to see it. I've seen the anime and the manga that was based upon this, which itself was based upon the book Battle Royale. But directed by a
Japanese man,
Fukasaku.
Yeah.
And featuring a couple people that we've seen before. We were watching this, and one of the characters who comes up, one of the girls, I said to Freddie, as soon as I saw her, man, that girl looks like Gogo Yubari from Kill Bill.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, she kind of does. Turns out she was.
What do you know?
Yeah.
Small world.
Yes. And the teacher was none other than B.
Charles
Takeshi.
Bronson.
No.
Japan's Charles Bronson.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. His name is B. Takeshi. He did, if you remember, Blind Swordsman Zatoichi.
You know, I've never seen it.
Yeah, but do you
remember? You were my guide. She's like, think of this this way. Okay, if this were The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I am your Ford prefect.
You are my Ford prefect.
To your Arthur Dent.
Exactly.
Quentin Tarantino had re-released to the States a film called Blind Swordsman Zatoichi. It was a samurai film about a blind samurai. And that was played by none other than B. Takeshi. And also, he was one of the hosts of Takeshi's Castle, which was an old Japanese game show in which people had to do very messy and very crazy stunts to earn money. It was the precursor to the Ninja Warrior and MXC and American Gladiator stuff that you see now. It was like one of the first ones to come out. But let's go with the synopsis. of this film. Right, cool. Do you want to go with the synopsis?
Well, I mean, to me, if I were to synopsize it, I would say it is The Lord of Flies meets The Most Dangerous Game.
That is very accurate. I was going to tell you I saw a lot of Lord of the Flies in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But basic plot line, Japan is in the shithole, basically. It's falling apart, and they're having a definite problem with unruly children. And so they...
13% unemployment?
Yes, 13% unemployment.
We're at 5.5 right now, I believe.
Yeah. So if it gets any worse, look to this to start happening. They introduced the Millennial Education Reform Act, better known as the Battle Royale Act, which means that every year they pick one ninth grade class at random and they take them to this deserted island. And they give them each a backpack with food and water, a map and a compass, and a random weapon. And release them out into the wild and tell them, go fight each other. Last one standing gets to go home.
And in that respect, it reminded me a lot of Stephen King's short story, The Long Walk, that he wrote under his pseudonym, Richard Bachman. So as a horror nut, I kind of had a parallel to draw there. And I was like, oh, look at this. It, in a way, I could see how this action film, it's a horrific concept to think of our nation's children murdering one another.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting to note the like total breakdown that happens almost immediately with these kids. I mean, there's a couple of them that can't handle the idea of having to kill other people, and so they take their own lives. There's about two or three suicides in it. But after that, everything else is just every little petty problem these kids had gets magnified.
Yeah, like the character who is one of the toughest characters in the story, the girl is kind of, I guess, the bad girl, slutty girl.
Yeah.
Who, basically, that's almost precisely what it is. She finds a lot of excuses for, they do justify their actions by these high school grudges that they have.
Yeah.
The ones who do kill.
You stole my boyfriend and now I'm going to kill you.
Right. And it was kind of disturbing in that respect.
Yeah. Or honestly, when you talk about horrific things, one of the things that I thought was most horrific, there was a scene that takes place in a lighthouse, which involves a group of girls. They have all created this sort of utopia for themselves. You know, they're all polite to one another. They're all happy. They're all working together, sort of taking themselves out of this situation. It's sort of like where you would want to be in this situation. Right. And one of them, her boyfriend had been killed by someone who is now in the building and nobody knows but her. And so she attempts to poison this guy. But one of the other girls eats it first, and she ends up dying. And they don't know the one girl has the poison, so they start fighting amongst each other as to who did this, who poisoned this meal, and they all end up killing one another. Like, right there in that room, while this girl, who was the one who actually poisoned them, just cowers in a corner and watches.
Right. Basically. That was another kind of horrific little scene where you're like, anytime someone finds any type of respite from what's going on, you just know it's a very, very tenuous, temporary situation that sooner or later, a character that you may have become attached to in Act 1, by the end of Act 2 is either dead or fighting for their life. And you're like, you know that's the foregone conclusion. That's the whole point of the battle royale in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why, we were discussing while watching this that a movie like this could never, ever be made by an American studio.
It's funny that you say that because it almost was.
Right.
It was picked up by someone. Let me...
Yeah, because we were discussing, I mean, post-Columbine.
Yeah, well, no. Even post Columbine, they were going to film it. The filming had started in 2006.
I'm willing to believe that one of the reasons it didn't finish is because of the high school violence problem we've had.
Yeah. What had happened was it was slated to actually be released this year, and then Virginia Tech happened, and they said, too soon. We'll keep it on the back burner. I don't think it's been totally shut down though.
Right. And so, I mean, that's a legitimate concern for a lot of parents to think that, you know, you're sending your child away. In this movie, however, I'm sure the parents are aware of the fact that this is a rite of passage.
Yeah.
That one in 40 parents, I guess, gets to keep their children.
Yeah.
Into adulthood, essentially, because of, I guess, this helps the struggling economy. That it's a Darwinism at its, like, most extreme.
Yeah, except one of the things that confuses me is, and they go a little more in depth into the characters in the actual novel, I found out. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I can't find a copy. But the two kids that are, they're not even ninth graders. They've willingly come back to do this competition again. I mean that just seems kind of like crazy.
You know, I didn't have a real good handle on why.
The two of them, the one came back for revenge because he was forced to kill his girlfriend, kill the one
right.
he loved.
And he wanted to kill the one Japan's Charles Bronson character.
Yeah, he wanted to kill the teacher.
Because he held a grudge against the teacher.
Yeah, he wanted to end the teacher.
Was the other one just addicted to killing at this point?
Well, actual novel, what had happened was apparently when he was in utero, his parents had gotten into a car wreck. And it caused some brain damage in him, so he was incapable of feeling emotion.
I could see that.
And so he basically, in the book, flipped a coin to see if he'd go back in or not. They gave him the option to.
Like Two-Face.
Yeah, yeah. He flipped a coin. It came up, whatever, heads. And so he went back into the tournament. But they made him out to be much more sort of just a psychopath.
He really was. I mean, like, he was, I don't know. You know, I did not go into this movie knowing at all what I was in for.
Yeah.
When you told me Battle Royale, the first image that came to mind was professional wrestling. So, you know, that's just where
when
I went.
When school
with
kids
it, you know.
Show up, you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, they end up out on this island, and they're in their uniforms, and they're tramping around all over just murdering each other with whatever weapons they were given. And I'm just like, wow, this is, you know, I didn't expect this. I didn't expect anything. I had no preconceived notions whatsoever of what to expect from any of the characters. So in the opening to the film, I was kind of like, okay, I don't know who's the bad boy, who's the good guy. You know, because I guess of my Western upbringing.
Yeah,
and
well,
my,
you know, you're used to a lot of Western style films. You're probably sitting down looking for the John Hughes archetypes. All right, where's the jock? And that's one of the reasons why I think that it might be a good thing if this gets remade, at least for a Western audience, to give you a better idea of the situations in that. Because really, you know, these kids are in the same homeroom together. It's very similar to high school, where you keep the same homeroom through many, many years. So all of these kids know each other fairly intimately.
Right.
And consequently, we don't get that. They don't share the same sort of archetypes that we do. There's no jock, there's no brain, there's no, you know,
right, your basic Breakfast Club.
Yeah, you don't get your Breakfast Club 5 in that mix,
right?
Or if there is some version of it, you don't recognize it. So I would like to see this with like a different spin. But then again, I've always been one to say, you know, like they had a problem with this movie because apparently some girl killed a friend when she was like 13 years old, and she was a big fan of the movie, and they were pinning the blame.
Of course,
on the movie.
I mean that's all, and you know what? I mean that's just the risk you run with anything of this nature. Artistically, is one, maybe you will inspire somebody who's close to the edge. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll just be falsely accused of the fact that you did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That happens.
You know,
a lot.
Maybe some kid who was already well over the edge is going to do it and then use you as a convenient excuse.
Right.
Or some lawyer who's looking to make a name for himself.
And regardless, though, regardless of whether that happens or not, these types of stories are powerful stories that I think that people need to keep telling. Like The Most Dangerous Game, again, you know, it's a classic. It holds up. It's remade 100 times. Lord of the Flies the same way. You know, that concept is all about society and about what we consider acceptable losses.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, what it's about the greater good and what your average citizen considers an acceptable loss. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because, again, it's that thing of, you know, Darwinism, it's social Darwinism, you know, where the survival of the fittest, the, you know, why bother feeding 39 of these kids when they're not going to contribute because 13% of the population is going to be out of work?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of, it in a cold, logical way, it makes sense why they would create something like Battle Royale. Also, as far as we were discussing, you know, there being a westernization of the storyline, I don't know whether or not they drew any inspiration from it or not, but the film Wilderness,
yeah,
which is a I believe it was produced in the UK. It's a film I had watched for our other show, NOTLP, that is about school kids out in the wilderness on a retreat learning self-reliance, and it has a similar story arc to Battle Royale.
Yeah.
So, and it also has, you know, some similar outcomes. Very entertaining, but, you know, it doesn't have the balls to make it state-sanctioned violence.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Battle Royale just goes all out with. You know, capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Preemptive capital punishment to the welfare state, I guess, is really one way of looking at the movie.
Yeah. Now, I will say that I discussed that this was apparently banned in the U.S. Turns out that no, that's not the case. So
anyway. Publicity stunt?
No, actually, the large theory is that Toei, the company that owns the rights to Battle Royale, is pretty crazy with their distribution rights and acquiring them. Like it would require a god awful amount of money, something like $2 million, to acquire the rights to this film.
And yet, so no company has felt that they could recoup that, so it's all bootlegs here?
Yeah.
At this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's word of mouth, though. I had heard this title thrown around quite a bit over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Just in circles of, you know, horror fans, people who are fans of exploitation cinema, this title has come up a lot as a very violent picture, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, a big part of that, I think, is the, again, it comes back to these are teenagers killing each other off out in the wilderness.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes it feel even more violent than it is, you know, had it been adults.
Yeah, because, you know, not a whole lot of, you know, there was a lot of action. There was a lot of conflict between these guys. But they said that everybody gets a different weapon. Well, it looks like a good 3/4 of the weapons that everybody received were guns.
Right.
There's only really two scenes that don't involve a gun. One involves a crossbow. No, three. One involves a crossbow, one involves an axe, and one involves a knife. And the knife is probably the most uncomfortable scene if you're a guy.
That was rough. But there was also the lid to the, like, pots and pans.
Yeah, but that only came up for like a second. I mean, most of it was the kids shooting each other.
Right, that's true. And, you know, I came out of this movie. I did enjoy it quite a bit. I thought it was a really good movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if I took away any type of moral or lesson whatsoever from it in the end, though.
I don't think it was supposed to have a moral or a lesson. I don't even think the book was supposed to have a moral or a lesson. It was supposed to be just kind of like Lord of the Flies. It was supposed to just show you how quickly civility and civilization itself can just break down under the right circumstances. I mean, these kids go from happy, smiling, early teenagers to murderers.
Yeah, quickly. Literally overnight.
Yeah.
Not even overnight. I mean, a couple of them are trying to kill each other like 45 minutes out the gate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the main character comes out and already people are murdering each other.
Yeah.
Like, they've just made it out. And some of them, and not all of them, are like the one girl we mentioned, because she goes cold-blooded quickly.
Right.
Or the one psychopath boy. I mean, the first murder you see is this fat kid who's scared to death and obviously just doing this because he doesn't want to die.
Right, with a crossbow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's another... I don't know. I guess what I'm coming from with this is the kids, some of them I think still believed it was a joke at that point.
Yeah.
That they were being... A trick was being played on them.
Yeah.
And I guess my confusion comes in the culture in the society where the Battle Royale is happening, they're aware of the fact that this phenomenon is happening, that this program's in place. Or no? Do you know? Because no, I mean, they were on the news in the beginning.
They were on the news. I think they don't give a whole lot of details.
Yeah,
about what this is. Yeah. Plus the fact that something as ludicrous as that,
mm-hmm.
especially when the classes are at random. You know, there's a part of you that when it says no, we weren't picked.
Right.
That would never happen to me.
But yeah, but you know, in the opening sequence, they have the was it a chopper? I can't remember what, but there's a little girl who's all covered in blood.
Yeah, the supposed winner of the previous one.
Right, and yeah. You know, the news is there, and the camera crews are there, and it's broadcast. You know.
Yeah.
And then these kids are taken off to this camp, and it kind of felt like it was a mystery that you know that they didn't believe. You know, it almost felt like they were unaware of the fact that the Battle Royale was a thing, that it existed.
I'd have to look into it more. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, other than that, I mean, that's a nitpicking thing to say, but, you know, I mean, just that was kind of an issue I had with it. I was wondering, you know, how different, I guess, the story would be told had they brought it over here to make an American version as they're wont to do with everything nowadays.
Well, first of all the children would be very, very pretty.
Of course.
And they would be named like Hunter and Megan. All of them. Because they're single private boy,
school kids, right?
Every single boy is named Hunter. Every single girl is named Megan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's the only difference, though.
Yes.
Yeah. But
And as a side note, I wanted to point that out. They are... they pull no punches. I mean, you have these scenes, and after every scene, they will tell you the names of the kids that died and how many are left.
Yeah, it had in that way, it reminded me of The Running Man a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know the film Running Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that post-apocalyptic game show thing, you know, taken to. It had a realistic feel to it.
Yeah,
the characters. This was not like a comic booky situation at all.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't like your standard action film where everybody's like larger than life.
Right, and
you know you've got this like lantern jawed, gruff, badass superhero kind of guy. No, these were really teenagers, and they were acting just like teenagers.
Right,
in a situation like this,
not at all what I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, like going into it, I really thought it was going to be over the top comic book.
Yeah, and I even thought that it was going to be kind of crazy. And yeah. There is a little comic bookiness. I mean, these kids take so many fucking bullets to kill.
Yeah.
Just clips get emptied into them, and they're still getting up for some sort of like screaming shooting event.
I could not help but think about Columbine though when we were watching it, and I think that is the issue. I think that there is a certain amount of wisdom to the people who have decided to put off remaking this as an American film, because and maybe I don't know what it is in particular, but the whole concept was so horrifying.
Yeah.
Of high school violence, you know, that I think this movie would have been more entertaining, I guess, had I not had that as part of my consciousness and part of my consideration going into it.
Well, you know, I think some of the issue, you know, there was Columbine, but then that movie would sort of dictate itself to come out. Right. I mean, but Virginia Tech sort of made it fresh again because, mm-hmm. You know, for lack of a better instance, I always hate bringing this up, but look at the falling of the Twin Towers.
Right.
I mean, there was a certain period where nobody, you didn't put it on film. It wasn't in TV shows. I mean, they had to change the Spider-Man promos.
Right.
Because they featured the Twin Towers and not in any bad situation. They just made a web between
them. They don't want people to remember. Yeah. It's even
but like two or three years later, you couldn't turn on a TV show or watch a film and not have them bring up that situation.
Right.
I mean, there's a sort of mourning period where you never talk about it, and then after that, everybody wants to talk about it because that mourning period's over.
It's part of the healing process, too.
Yeah, yeah, and I think a movie like that would have fit like 2 or 3 years after Columbine, but which, it, you know, that's what it would have been had it been released right now, but then Virginia Tech came out, and it sort of reopens that wound.
Right.
And
because of the realism and the victims of this film, you know what I mean? Like that...
Yeah.
Coming into it, and this is kind of ironic that our first episode would have such a serious tinge to it.
Yeah, I know.
Because coming into, obviously from the title of this show, Lethal Heat, Force Impact.
Yeah.
That I was kind of thinking more like Iron Eagle.
Yeah! Yeah. You know,
but I'm kind of glad we did start off with Battle Royale because it was such a fresh experience for me.
Yeah. Well, let's go to a little more lighthearted side. What did you think about the actual action in this film? I mean...
Oh, it was really well directed.
Yeah.
The action sequences were very believable. They were very intense.
Yeah.
Not to the point of like an over-the-top Matrix ridiculousness.
No, nobody was doing anything crazy.
I mean, a couple of shots. When in those points where really extreme action was happening was in the third act of the film where it was merited. Where you're like, okay, we've shown you 40 battles.
Yeah.
You know, and now we've got to ratchet it up a little for the last act.
Oh, yeah.
In that, I was like, yeah, that was cool. And I do like I felt that you know, I talk about Rambo all the time, but the control room of Battle Royale where they were monitoring everybody reminded me a hell of a lot of Rambo, where he comes in and destroys it in the end.
I don't know why, but the scene near the end with what was the character's name? The crazy kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dark Suit.
Yeah, we'll call him Dark Suit. Yeah, Dark Suit, Shaggy Hair.
Yeah, Dark Suit, Shaggy Hair. Where that card exploded, and he's just sort of like wandering around holding that Uzi through the flames.
Yeah.
That made me think a little bit of Rambo, too. I don't know why.
There was a couple of moments where I think the director of this film is a fan of the Rambo movies.
Yeah.
There was just a couple of tiny little nods that only somebody who watched them a lot would notice. But, like, you know, I kept waiting for the main character.
After listening to our discussion, I mean, there's quite a few different references to all different kinds of movies.
Yeah. Yes. Didn't you expect him to destroy the control room in the end, though?
Kinda.
As I felt like they were going to bring down the whole Battle Royale system in the end. And you know, for those who haven't seen it, we don't want to spoil exactly what happens. But, you know, it didn't end exactly the way I expected.
No.
Actually, we're just about out of time. This is going to be Lethal Force. I started to say Lethal Horse. Lethal Force Heat Impact.
Lethal Heat Force Impact.
Lethal Heat Force Impact. It's a tough title. Even the hosts can't get it right.
I do want to say, before we go, I want to give this little announcement. I was going to talk about a little bit about Ninja Gaiden, but we ran out of time.
Oh, yeah.
But I do want to say that next weekend, if you happen to have it or you can go out and rent it, do so. They're doing something called the Weekend of Vengeance to advertise for Ninja Gaiden 2 coming out. There's going to be a whole bunch of stuff online. There's a contest where you can win a special Ninja Gaiden 2 themed Xbox 360 Elite. There's some gamer tag pictures that they're going to be releasing for free, and three ninja related movies that they're putting on Xbox Live for free.
You can't beat that.
For free. They are putting out on June 13th, you're going to get Ninja Hunter. On June 14th, A Life of Ninja. And June 15th, Ninja in the Deadly Trap.
Nice.
So if you have an Xbox, if you have Xbox Live access, log on. Come a part of the Weekend of Vengeance. hop on, play some Ninja Gaiden 2, download your scores onto the leaderboard, see how you're standing, and have a lot of fun. It's a good game.
Yeah, and we'll see you. This should be a monthly, and we'll have guests.
Yeah.
So look out for episode 2, as long as you like episode 1.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Clean up your looks with all the lies in the books to make a citizen out of you. Because they sleep with a gun and keep an eye on you, son, so they can watch all the things you do. Because the drugs never work, they're gonna give you a smirk, 'cause they got methods of keeping you clean. They're gonna rip up your heads, your aspirations to shreds. Another cog in the murder machine, they said. And girls in the clique,
The awful names at the stick. You're never gonna fit in much, kid. But if you're troubled and hurt, what you got under your shirt will make them pay for the things that they did. They said, I'll teenage escape.